Accession number 10165, reel number 8.
Martin McLean, reel 8. So what happened? What was your reception when you arrived to join the first DLI at Catterick?
Well, I felt very lonely and desolate and downfallen, really, to have to leave the squad. I thought I was going to be posted somewhere else. And I landed at the first at the Richmond station, and nobody there to greet me. There was a horse limber there. Now, them days, the army was just beginning to get mechanised, and the only sort of horse transport, the only sort of motor transport, was run by the RDSC, or the tank corps, or people of that nature. But the infantry had only horse-drawn vehicles. We had the big long limber, which used to be known as a GS limber, and we had the cart. The cart was just for the CO's kit and what have you, and the signal kit. Anyway, there was a GS wagon there. I don't think it belonged to the Durhams, but the bloke shouted down, or the soldier shouted down, I'm picking up some of the lads. Where are you going to? I said, I'm going to Mons Lane. He says, sling your kit on. So I slung my pack on, me kit, which was quite heavy. I don't know if I carried equipment them days, but I had me kit bag and stuff for this great coat a lot. And I slung them on this wagon and walked along with the wagon. And there's two or three more lads with it, and I landed up in Mons Lanes. And I went to the guard room and asked what was happening to me. I said, Private McLean reporting from Regimental Depot. Guard commander says, oh, yes. And he said, bugler, sound for C Company, orderly corporal. And the orderly corporal came up, a fellow called Morton, who I learnt his name many months later on because him and I had quite some run-ins. He came along and got us. He took me to a barrack room without telling me what it was for. I still hadn't a clue. And he put me in with a platoon called 10 Platoon of C Company. And I went in there and... Now, it was a complete contrast and change. You see, at the depot, everybody's on the toes. Everything's so spick and span. And I went in this barrack room, there's soldiers laying on the beds. Their day was over. They'd done their training. They were finished and they were allowed to do this. They were finished. A trained soldier has a lot more relaxing time than what a young soldier undergoing training is. So after training's finished, he can put his bed down and go to bed of an afternoon if he's doing nothing, which wasn't tolerated at the depot. You couldn't put your bed down at 9:30 and you're going to your bed at 10:15. It lights out unless you're ill, like you've been hurt in rugby and you're bed down through injuries. That meant you were excused all duty and you could go to bed. That was the only time we could put a bed down there, but everybody had their bed down. And there seemed a friendly atmosphere in the barrack room. It was strange in a bigger way because now I was in among old soldiers, men who had been overseas, who'd been in action in different places. And they come around your bed, who are you? What are you doing here? And so you tell them, well, I'm from Regimental Depot. And they show you where to get your kit from. They help you to carry your bedding from the stores. They take you up the stores. You draw your bedding and they help you show you where your bed is and they help you to put it down. They sit round with you. Very friendly type of folks. Now, all this is all part of building up esprit de corps. They're helping somebody who's strange because they've all gone through the same boat themselves. And there's one little fella there called McLaughlin and another fella called Lally. Now, Lally lived in Biker, not far from me, and he was a battalion footballer. And he played for the army as well at football. And we got on very friendly that day. And anyway, next morning, I got down to sleep that night and up at Ravalli, same as Ravalli, exactly the same everywhere. If you're not out of bed, the orderly sergeant comes and tips you out of bed. Up goes your bed. And so, to avoid a lot of confusion of scrambled blankets and everything, as soon as the orderly corporal or the orderly sergeant comes in, you're out of bed like a shot. And then it's a fight to get into the ablutions once again, no hot water and things. So there's two platoons for about 8 wash basins. Get washed and cleaned and shaved and get ready for whatever's coming up. Later on when you're doing individual training, it's just one mad scramble to get washed and dressed and out on parade. When you're on PT, you just had to get a wash and out on PT. But anyway, I'm deviating there. Next morning was Ravalli and Corporal Morton came trudging back to the barroom. Everybody's away on the different jobs. There was... In each barrack room, they left a barrack room orderly to look after the barrack room that day and to clean up the barrack room to ensure that nothing was stolen from the barrack rooms. There was one man always detailed for barrack room orderly. It was invariably somebody sick, somebody been injured, football or rugby, or some other sport. Or if it wasn't that, it was an old soldier, very old soldier. Incidentally, there was a very old soldier in the barrack room called Lindsay. Now, I was amazed at this old man, toothless man, grey head, and he had about four stripes up down, upside down, like a bugle major here. And they were good conduct stripes. And he had a job in working in the dining rooms. But it was nice to meet all these people. And they all made themselves so willing to be talked to. There was none of them being standoffish or, oh, you young soldier, get away. They were just trying to be friendly with you. So Lance Corporal Morton came for us. He says, you've got to go to the sports stores and draw some rugby kits. Now I was getting some inkling. Now I start getting to know what I was there for. I said, what's it all about? He says, you didn't know. I said, no, I don't know. He says, you're playing rugby for the battalion this afternoon. So that was that. I went and drew me kits. He showed me where the stores were. He took me down, as a matter of fact. And I drew me kits. And I was liberty then. And he says, when you're finished there, go and have a chat with Corporal Lonigan next door. Corporal Lonigan plays for the battalion rugby team. And Corporal Armstrong, by the way, I'll be meeting Armstrong this weekend, a great friend of mine. He's a corporal. He plays rugby for the battalion. So go and have a chat with them. They'll tell you all about it. Who you're playing, what's happening. So I went and met them, had a chat with them. Armstrong became my lifelong pal, as a matter of fact. Still even today. And that's 1932, and this is now 1987. And we still meet each other twice a year and have a get-together. But anyway, I was playing rugby for the battalion. What it was, the Army Cup ties were coming up. The rounds for the Army Cup. And they wanted to see my standard of play to see if I could be included in the Army Cup team. That was our battalion Army Cup team. So they had again a game against the South Wales Borders, who are a real hard rugby playing team. And I went down there to play against them at a place called Hipswell. I don't know how we got there. I think we all had to walk about 2 mile or 3 mile. But there was no such thing as buses and things like that them days. It was just, if you're playing at a garrison, you had to walk. Down we went to Hipswell and I had a hard game of rugby against these lads. And they beat us. But the Welsh are noted for the rugby. They did beat us, but I earned my place in the battalion team from there on. And then it turned out that my company commander was the rugby officer, a fellow called Captain Kirby. And funny enough, Captain Kirby I'll be seeing this weekend as well at the annual reunion. Him and I always have a chat about rugby. So from there on, I played for the battalion rugby team. But I'd like to come back to the barrack room and the type of men that we met there. About 4 days later on, the squad that I was in, now consisting of maybe 30 men or 36 men, reduced in numbers on account of rejections, all landed up to the battalion. They marched up from the Richmond station. They all loaded onto their kit onto a GS wagon, and it was brought up for them. And they marched up the camp. And some of them were detailed to come into my platoon, which is great to have them in. Jimmy Brown, McLaughlin, and two or three more, Woodhead. And it was nice to have them, you know, back in friendly faces again. And they were all mystified. I said, great, great. Now I was giving them a tip, you know, this is great. And then when we got round the fire, we had fires on then, by the way. The army, regular army, being a bit more lenient, as long as the fireplace was swept and cleaned the next morning, they didn't matter the charred fireplace and things like that with a fire burnt. As long as it was clean and cleared out, you could have a fire on. And they used to sit round at night time and talk around the fire. And these lads was telling them it was good. And then we all got to know one another. And we settled in to really like the platoon. We had a sergeant in the platoon called Sergeant Cowell. Great man. He was a battalion footballer. And a bit of a notorious character. Notorious character in as much as he thought the world of his men that he was working with, the privates, the lance corporals and the corporals that was in his platoon. And no way would he let anybody interfere with his men. He thought the world of his men. But if you were done wrong, he'd thump you. He wouldn't thump you evilly. He'd get a hold of you and say, you're not pulling your weight, lad, and give you a thump maybe on the chest or the back. For instance, he had me on once. I was responsible for cleaning his tuna cup. He lived down in Richmond. He'd been a married man. He could go out and live there. He had me clean his tunic and his belts and things for him of a morning, so that when he came in, he just had to put them on. And we squad lads were sitting around the barrack room one day, and you have photographers come around from the Richmond at times to take photographs individual, which the lads just like get taken and sent home. And some of us were sitting together. I said, "Oh, well, that's how we'll photo's taken." So I dashed into the sergeant's bunk and put on his tunic and his Inkerman whistle, his sash, and he had his cane. And out I went, and the lads sat around me as if I was a sergeant. And then the next morning, the sergeant, well, not next morning, a few days later on, the sergeant came in and says, "Come here," and give me a punch, a jovial punch. I couldn't say that any of his punches that he hit you with was with any evil intent. It was just to give you a sharp jerk that you're pulling you up. But a nice way about it. We liked him very, very much. He was a fine bloke, fine sergeant. You see, my wife says to me, "Who's that fine-looking sergeant you've got in your battalion? Never told us he had new sergeants." And he says, she dragged me down to the photographer's to have a look. You bugger," he says. With the squad lads, all I was dressed in his outfit, and I did look the part of a sergeant. Unfortunately, I wasn't a sergeant; I was just a private. Anyway, we had great fun over that photograph. But we didn't have much time. This was February, and the battalion had just got rid of an awful lot of men. Now, the 1st Battalion, is that you get to know these things, is a feeder battalion. The battalion at home is a feeder battalion. You always have two battalions in a regiment. One battalion is overseas. Our 2nd Battalion was in India. As a matter of fact, by this time, they'd been in India about 20 years. And now a battalion flies over and out in about 2 years. That's a tour of duty. A battalion used to go overseas for, well, let's put it on the long-term business, since I know now, the 2nd Battalion done 22 years overseas. Some of the men had practically done all their service in the 2nd Battalion. Well, a man joins the army for 7 years and 5 years on reserve. Some take on to stay on in the army longer, and others are not permitted to take on because they haven't turned out so proficient and they've got to finish. And so the replacements have got to come from the 1st Battalion to keep the overseas battalions up to war establishment, as they call it. And so a big draft had just recently left from the 1st Battalion to go to the 2nd Battalion, and that is why there's so many vacancies in each platoon, and that's where we filled in a big gap in C Company when we went there, and Support Company, S Company we call it. And from when we got there, we didn't have much chance of settling down firmly with our feet on the ground and enjoy the old soldiers' training. We still had to wear uniform when we were out, by the way. If we walked around the garrison, we had to walk out in putties and everything, belts. And as time went on, they'd done away without having to walk out in putties. You could walk out in slacks. That's trousers and ammunition boots or shoes. And no white belt. You could walk around the garrison in that. As long as you saluted officers when you saw them. You saw plenty of them because there was an awful lot of army in Kattrick at the time. As I said, we didn't have much time to settle down to the lazy life because the battalion now is coming on to its training period. They start in February until March, I think it was, on what they call individual training. That meant platoon training. That is, the sergeant and the officer in charge of the platoon were responsible for training the men on the elementary things of weapon training again, of drill once again, and all the things that we pass out on passing out parades as soldiers at the depot.
So that would be repetition, mainly?
Repetition, yes. And weapon training. There was more concentration on weapon training and bayonet training and PT than on the ordinary elementary things, you could say. They didn't teach us, once again, how to clean rifles and things. That was accepted, you knew. We learned more advanced stuff in a way of individual training. It's hard to define what that meant, but we did. It was elementary training. We learned some tactics in this. We'd go on the moors up at Kattrick.
Is this the first time you'd been out on tactical training?
Yes. We're now doing tactical training. The only tactical training we did was at the depot. I must add this. Was a simple thing. When you were taught to advance to attack enemy. You were attacked in open order, and you were taught how to get up off the ground and run across an area of field or road or of a parade ground, wherever it may be, and use cover. That's as far as the tactical exercise we had, was the advance and movement during an attack.
But you've done that at the barracks as at the depot.
At the depot we've done that. Now we're at Carrick. We've done this on the moors in a more realistic manner. Movement out. You're working with your section commander, and you're learning section signals. You're obeying the section commander and the platoon commander and the platoon sergeant, and you're doing simple exercise on the moors, apart from all the weapon training you are doing and the drill. And then from there on, that led on to company drill, company training. That meant the company commander now took over the training of the company, and it was invariably exercises, night exercises, and all this sort of thing that went on.
Can you tell me a bit more about those?
Well, the company commander and the officers, they obviously need training as much as anybody else in the handling of men in the field. So the company commander takes his men out, and he uses all the facilities at his disposal, the signalers, and the runners, and the cycle orderlies, and the intelligence people, to convey and take messages and bring messages back out to platoons. So he may send a platoon commander out with a platoon to take up a position on a certain feature. Now, this is all strange to us, because they had done a little bit of it with a sergeant. Now we'd shake out and we'd get into... We wouldn't dig in these instances, because platoons couldn't go digging all over the moors. You'd take up a platoon position, and the section would be shaken out into a position, and another section somewhere else, another section somewhere else, maybe split up into smaller numbers in a section, and you lay there on the moor representing that was a platoon position. And then there'd be messages conveyed from the company commander to the platoon commanders to advance and take up an occupation in another village, or whatever it may be, or take, retire, all the sort of thing that one would expect to have an actual movement and control of troops was practiced by the officer and the section commanders and the corporals. Now, the officer, like our officer, it was the first time he'd commanded men.
Who your company officer was Kirby, was it?
Major Kirby. Captain Kirby.
Captain Kirby.
Yes.
And who was your platoon?
My platoon commander was a man who's a brigadier. He lives now up at Stamfordham, and he's called Brigadier May. We used to call him Paddy May, behind his back. He was a lieutenant, second lieutenant. And behind his back, we also used to call him his own well-known nickname, Crackers May, which stuck with him right throughout his service.
How did he get that?
Couldn't tell you. I think it was from his methods, his way of going on. He was impetuous, and he was always on the move, always doing things, always skylarking, always playing on. I don't know whether it followed him from school, but we got noise called Crackers by the officers, so that was it. I wouldn't like to delve too much in that, because officer's field is not my line. They are different kettle of fish. And so Lieutenant May taking us on these exercises on the moors, in assistance with the company commander, under orders. All we were doing was just adopting a formation, adopting a line position on the ground, doing an attack or withdrawal under orders of the company commander and the platoon commander. Company commander is getting the handling of the men, the officers are getting the handling of the men, the men were getting the knowledge or the practice of shaking out of the walk, shaking out the double, shaking out in pebble formation, arrowhead formation, and adopting defensive
positions.
What
was a pebble formation?
A pebble is just dotted, scattered around, just like a handful of pebbles you'd throw on the ground. They'd be scattered. So it was I didn't hear of any other method other than the Durhams used this. It was a pebble formation where you just scattered around, so you weren't close together. The answer to that was simple, that if a burst of fire came and you all grouped together, you're all coppets. Whereas if you're scattered out, there's only two or three wood coppets.
What about the arrowhead?
The arrowhead was when you went over a hilltop. It was the section commander was invariably in the front with the men fallen in like an arrowhead behind in a V shape, so that on each side of the corporal would be each side of the V, and he would go over the hill first. Before he went over the hill, he'd look to see if there's any enemy, see that everything was clear, and then move the men over gradually. And that was known as the V shape. And then, or in line, as we were doing an attack over the top. All these simple things were things we had to learn for training, for all sorts of training, for warlike service. And we learned it in this elementary way with the company commander, having previously learned it with the platoon commander.
Now, had you done any route marching? Because you're now with the DLI, you'd surely be at the quicker rate now, the 100...
Yes. Route marching was part of your life. There was no transport for carrying soldiers them days. It was walk, march. We used to march on the moors, march everywhere we went. And then we used to go on an RSM's drill parade every week, every Saturday. And then we'd follow an adjutant's drill parade. And then maybe another RSM's drill parade. And they had you drilled up the whole battalion, this is. And we were now learning in the company to march at the light infantry pace. When we went on the RSM's drill parade, we adopted all the light infantry because we'd been built up that standard. As I said, when we left the depot, the instructors were given us a quicker pace of march. So when we fell in line with it, we knew all the drill, only we were just going a little bit faster, 140 paces per minute. But route marching was our way of life. Yes, everywhere we went, we'd done route marching. On the moors, you name it, we were there.
Had you done much at Fenham, route marching?
Very little. Very little. The only time we went on route marching was just to give you the feel of marching along a road, on a route, with your full pack on and your rifle. They didn't have time for them things. They must have thought that we'd get plenty of that in the army later on.
Did you get tired quickly doing this 140 paces? I mean, or did you get...
Well, I'll be honest with you. I've never known them to maintain 140 paces at the minute. Because light infantry, even today, is a myth. It's a misnomer, they better name it. Because the light infantry in its infancy was meant as a skirmishing troops. You carry light equipment. You carry very little in a way of encumbrances. But today, in the modern army, and even in my days, you are encumbered up with everything that could pack on your back. 120 rounds of ammunition, a bandolier of ammunition, that is when you're in action, loaded up with picks and shovels and trenching tools, exactly the same as the infantryman. Well, you try to get a man marching 140 paces a minute with his... just coming forward, advancing the quite number of years, as I used to carry on my back when I was in a company in Burma, 76 pound a kit. You could nowhere possibly march at 140 paces a minute for any length of time. And it was the same in the army them days. We were equipped the same as the infantry, and you'd get the men marching for 140 paces for half an hour, and then they start slacking off. So they couldn't keep it up, obviously. If we march with lighter equipment, yes. This is when the Durham Light Infantry used to love it. Everybody had to go to church prayer now. And the church prayer that we used to go to was about 2 miles away, to up by the signals place near Fishpond Wood, the garrison church. We used to have to march up with them because just adjacent to the garrison church was the Roman Catholic church. We fell out and went to a Roman Catholic mass, but we had to march there, march back. We lived about, our barracks is about 2 miles away from this church. And for the church prayer, you hear the band playing their particular tune of it for the staff parade of a morning, Sunday morning, on the square, when the adjutants would inspect all the orderly officers, all the orderly sergeants, and all the people, all the band, regimental band, before the battalion fell in. And once he'd inspect all this, the buglers would sound the fall in, fall in A, fall in B, fall in every company. And then they'd call once again for right markers. Right markers would go out for each company, and then we'd march on from our company lines onto markers, onto the square, for the ordinary Church of England or the ordinary Sunday church parade. And then we'd march off to the church parade at a light infantry pace. Now, our dress them days was our boots, putties, trousers, tunic, and a belt. No rifles, no weapons, just that way. And our ST superfine hats. And we'll march off, shown off, as we march through the garrison, past Sandy's home, past through the fire station, and all these places where troops used to congregate. We used to swank as we marched past, going faster than others. And we got up to the Fishpond Wood, and we'd go on, near Fishpond Wood, and we went to this garrison church. Now, at the end of the service, it's obvious that other units are there, and they all come out, and they decide to let the light infantry go first, or the light infantry's got to wait until everybody else is gone. And a lot of units used to stick to seniority. And the senior regiments must go off first, the Durhams last. But we used to love this and let them get a good start. And then the band would break up with the light infantry march. And we, being unencumbered as we were, we used to fly past these other battalions on the march, leave them standing, and back moan lines in no time. And they didn't like this marching past them because they have two bands in, and you get the echo of ours, and they couldn't keep their step. But we were so incessant on keeping ours, we could keep our step because we listened to one band. And we'd get back the lines quite happy and proud, puffing and blowing because we'd done 2 mile at lightning pace, no bother at all, and proud as peacocks because we'd been shown off the whole garrison. But apart from that, in my army service, I've had to march back for a time which I'll describe later on at Indin. But you cannot march lightning pace, not encumbered with all this equipment.
So it's more a tradition than it is a tradition. Useful military thing.
Yeah. Try to talk to officers today in a more modern army, and they cannot have it, they can't understand it. But I'm quite sure that if any light infantry battalion had been at the Falklands and carrying all them heavy kit that they had to carry, they'd find they couldn't do it unless we had done it on other previous occasions later on, stack with kit and then go at light infantry pace.
Right, so that was... How long would the individual and then company training take in before you went on to battalion training?
Well, I'd say, all in all, maybe 6 weeks. And then from there on, it was battalion training. You came under the command officer. Much on the same scheme. Much on the same idea. Now, let's just add into there. At the same time as all this, when there's a break, we were going to school for a second-class certificate of education. We're doing other things.
You'd already got the third class at Fenham.
I got my third class at Fenham, no bother. Now we're going for second class.
What did that entail?
That entailed, again, more advanced mathematics, dictations. They gave you a book, and our book was the 40 steps. 39 steps, that was it. 39 steps by H.G. Wells. You'd had to read it, and they'd ask you a questionnaire on this, and you had to answer the questions and, you know, give some... the majority of the answers right. And also they taught you an awful lot about regimental history and the army and the empire, which is a new thing which is out, a new book teaching about the formation of the army, its traditions and its ways of going on. In other words, they're educating you into the whole of your background that you're in with. Our individual training and company training carry on for about 6 weeks, I'd say. Now, I could be wrong at that. We'd have our breaks. We wouldn't be out the whole of the time. Like, company commander couldn't afford the time to go out with the company all the time. We'd done other things, sport, PT, and things filling in time. But we're never left idle, once again. But I must admit here, the majority of afternoons, we were free. You could go off to Sandy's swimming pool. They had an indoor swimming bus. Swim, go for a run, go on the sports fields, go playing cricket. Putting the shot, anything you wanted in that line, it was yours to be had. All you had to do was ask and make the effort to do it. I used to go cross-country run with two of my pals because I turned out quite a canny cross-country runner, having been with Gates at Congers. But I found that I was doing more rugby training now with our lieutenant May, who was a noted rugby player and a fanatic at it, and he was training the rugby team at Mons Lines in Catterick, and he was training them to be a better team altogether. And so it was a division now, do I go cross-country run or do I go playing rugby? And I found eventually I had to go out playing rugby training, which was 2 or 3 times a week. And then again, a few of us would get rugby ball and go playing on the sports field in our own time. Now, having done all our company training, then we'd follow on with the command officers. Battalion training, as they called it. The command officer was a fellow called Greenwell, Humpy Greenwell. Matter of fact, his nephew was in my company during the war, and we called him Humpy as well, but Humpty Green was an old worry of a man who must have been quite old. I don't know what age he was, but he was big man, humpbacked with age and grey moustache. Nice fella. But he was the command officer of the battalion, and he used to take the battalion on exercises. Now then,